mentored by some of the best minds in entrepreneurship in the world, then you're listening to the right podcast, Ditch Digger CEO. We're going to be interviewing CEOs and founders who will be telling their amazing rags-to-riches stories. These entrepreneurs who dominate the industries they serve will be sharing the secrets to their success. We'll be talking to millionaires and billionaires, many who started with nothing. You're going to be mentored with golden nuggets of shared experiences from my guest, whose time is worth thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars per hour. I started in the paving business right out of high school, and with no college education, mentorship has been my education of choice. I started over 25 companies in the last 20 years, have generated over $1.5 billion in revenues. My guarantee is this. If you listen to Ditch Digger CEO and you want to be more successful, you will become more successful. The secrets of my success and for many of the world's greatest business leaders will be revealed. Let Ditch Digger CEO mentor you.
All right, welcome to Ditch Digger CEO today. We've got a great story coming forward to here. We're blessed to have Greg Mazzillo on. Greg's in Tampa right now. Tampa's from his office, his home office in Tampa, talking to us. And then we're going to find out all about the promotional business and the talent business when it comes to hiring and finding great talent and a lot more from Greg. So Greg, welcome to Ditch Digger CEO Day. Thanks for being here.
Gary, excited to be joining you. Thanks for having me.
So Greg, we like to just go into, you know, basically we always want to find out that, you know, anything we can find out from the secrets of success, right? I read a book a long time ago. And it was The Laws of Success. And The Laws of Success was a book made from the turn of the century of people that built America, really. And you got to read it sometime. But the author basically was paid by a billionaire, not a billionaire, what would be a billionaire today, probably with somebody worth a couple hundred million, in the Vanderbilt family, I think it was. Okay. So basically interviewed what he thought were the most successful people in America that really had the most to do with the success of American entrepreneurship in the turn of the century. And so the book really written was awesome. It made a lot of sense to me to say, how do we do this in today's America? And I believe because of my blessings of entrepreneurship and great people that I meet, that I want to do some really, really fun stuff with something like that. And that's what our podcast is. So our goal is just to get to know you, where your upbringing was from, who were your mentors in your life. What are you doing to build still today? What you built and what are you doing to build tomorrow, which your vision wants you to build, right? So it's all about that stuff. So are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. So Greg, hey, just going to, where you're raised and, by maybe family and some early mentors and some visionaries you saw that sparked your interest in being a leader.
Yeah, probably more sparked my interest in owning my own business, because as I found out over time, I'm probably unemployable. So, I'm one of those typical kids. We might be about the same age, Gary. I'm one of those kids that, back in the day, I had a paper out. I mowed lawns. I shoveled snow. Grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, et cetera. And I enjoyed the independence of being able to do those things, a very probably lower middle class home, but my parents sacrificed to give me a great education. And I think, long story short, I went to college. I studied accounting. Talk about why did I start my business. I studied accounting and I thought I loved accounting. And I did. I loved accounting. I got all the awards in school, graduated first in my class. But I found out when I started doing accounting, I hated it. And, eventually my professors would say to me, Greg, we thought you were going to be like a partner, because I went to work for what was one of the big 8 CPA firms. We thought you were going to be like a partner. And I said, guys, you needed to have a class that starts at 7 in the morning, goes to 8 o'clock at night, and it's called Sit Down and Shut Up, because I can't do that, right? I didn't know that, right? You go to the class for an hour, you have fun. Well, anyhow, I found out pretty quickly that I love studying accounting. I hated doing it. I had a buddy that was a fraternity brother in college, and we became roommates after we graduated. And we'd go out on Friday nights looking for dates for Saturday night. And he'd be talking to me about what he did. And he was a distributor. You don't learn a lot about that when you study accounting, because you learn about manufacturing and cost accounting, right? So the more I listened to him, though, he was talking about a business where they were distributors of printing. And, you know, brochures, direct mail, forms back in the day were that, tags, labels, et cetera. And he was talking about $50,000 orders with $20,000 in profit and $100,000 orders with $40,000 in profit. I thought, good gravy, what do you do? And he hated his boss. I hated accounting. The more I heard what he had to say, I thought, we can do this. I know accounting, you know sales. We each put in $100. And within 3 months of graduating from college, we started this business called Proforma. And no real clue what we were doing, but what did we have to lose right out of college? And
what year was this?
1978.
Yeah, my story was 1981, so a few years later. Tony, I'm going to go back a little quick. So I believe some of my best feelings I had early in my life were when I collected that paper route money. I got, you know, $4 or $5 in tips, and I had that cash in my pocket, and I could go, you know, just kind of control. I felt like I could control my own destiny, especially when I had a lawn mowing and leaf raking, snow shoveling, all these things on my paper route. Man, how fun was it, right, to understand that you kind of had some independence there, right? And I feel like that start that you had and I had was a great advantage that compared to those kids that didn't do those things, right?
Yeah, it's a different generation. You know, a lot of them, and I'm not complaining, God bless them and good luck, but a lot of them want to be the, like, next famous app that changes the world. And, you know, you and I didn't know that world. You and I knew the world that we grew up in and we created our successes in.
Yeah, so it's 1978, and you guys were like $100 a piece. Tell us what that looked like, how the heck you did that.
You know what? That looks like we bought a used, a new answering machine back in the day when they were digital, some business cards and letterhead to send off some letters to some of our suppliers to get agreements to be able to represent them, because we're a distributor, and a used file cabinet. And so we got some suppliers that agreed to let us represent them. We started going door to door in 1978. Actually, he started 6 months after we graduated. And then I told the CPA firm I was leaving my job, and they asked me to see them through the busy season. I was on the, let me see, American Electric Power audit, the General Motors audit. And they said, Greg, we've invested a lot of money in you, but you see me through the busy season. It was a good decision. They ended up being our auditors. That was a good thing. And we lived off of my income for 6 months, and then I jumped full in. So we started January, the first 6 months after we graduated, and I jumped in June, a year after we graduated. Just started knocking on doors in 1978 by, let me see here, 1983, just through sheer hard work. We made the Inc. magazine list of the 500. That was when there was only 500. Now there's 5,000, but we made the Inc. 500 list 83, 84, and 85. And then we were probably about a $5 million company back then. And then, you know, Success Magazine published a story that I think came actually from our Inc. being in the Inc. 3 years in a row. And there was this story about my collection technique. I had a fraternity brother, Elio DiPaolo. Anyhow, people weren't paying their bills, and we had no money, right? Our working capital was the spread between when we paid our suppliers and when we collected money from our customers. So if our customers didn't pay, we'd be out of business. So I came up with this idea. I called up our customer. I said, hello, my name is Elio DiPaolo. My friend Greg Amazzello, he tell me you don't pay your bill. I think that's illegal, but anyhow, it worked. Success Magazine did this article about these two knucklehead fraternity brothers to start this business with a couple $100 and built this $5 million company. So we got requests to franchise. So in 85 and 86, we started franchising the business. Somewhere along the way, I got involved in the International Franchise Association. Somewhere along the way, I became good friends with Fred DeLuca, the founder of Subway. And we were both on the board of the IFA, International Franchise Association, together. I bought out my partner. The bank didn't like the way I did it. Fred had always asked if I wanted an investor. I never needed one till I bought out my partner, and the bank suggested I go find an investor. So Fred made an investment in the business many years ago, and we're in the process of buying that out since Fred has passed. And then somewhere along the way, about 25 years ago, you know, man, 22 years ago, I married my wife, and she's way smarter than I am. I'm successful because I got balls the size of this room, and I'll do anything, and I'm sheerly determined to be massively successful. But she's organizationally bright. She went to University of Notre Dame. She became our CEO pretty quickly after I married her. So she really helped what was a critical mess into critical mass, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago.
I almost said critical mass into critical mass. I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, here we are today, $650 million, trying to figure out how to get to our first $1 billion year. And just having a lot of fun with a lot of very, very good people.
That's amazing. That's you know, I've heard nothing but great things about Fred, the founder of Subway. A good friend of mine is Shelly's son. Do you know Shelly? Shelly is one of our.
I know more of Shelly and her success, and I have a lot of respect for what she's accomplished in the at-home healthcare space.
Space. She's one of our podcast guests, and she's a very good friend of mine. Anyway, but so I've gone to the International Franchise Association annual conference a couple times. One to see her inducted as the chair, or whatever you call it there. I think is it the chair or the
correct.
Oh, anyway, yeah, she spoke very highly of Fred. Right, that was a Subway guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, everybody loved Fred. Fred would just hang around at those things, and despite all of his success, he would just sit around and he would talk to people in the lobby. He'd sit around and make himself very available, and he was an inspiration to probably hundreds, if not more, of people in the franchising space.
I've heard that, and there is nothing but great about him. He just passed away. How long?
Oh, I think it's been 9 years now. Pretty sad, but he was a young, very healthy, active guy until he got sick.
Okay, so when you think about that transition from a $5 million business to franchising, what were the biggest challenges there that you had in doing that?
Well, the biggest challenges are realizing you're not in the printing and promotional products business anymore. Eventually, we added promotional product. That's all those giveaway items, branded items, you know, mugs, shirts, pens, pencils, etc. Branded promotional items that people use to promote their brand, to promote events, etc. The biggest challenge is understanding the business that you're in. And we went from being in the printing and promotional products business to being in the dream business, right? As a franchisor, our job is to help the dreams of our franchise owners come true. And that was a massive shift, going from being a distributor to being a franchisor, to only having one and then two and then three, and being undercapitalized. In franchising, there's only three phases. The first phase is obviously recruiting franchise owners and selling franchise owners, right? The second phase is the teach me phase. They're like little sponges. They suck it all up. Teach me, help me. I want to know the business. That's the second phase. And that's pretty easy to deliver on. The third phase, where many franchisors fail, is after the franchise owner knows as much as you do, and they're over in California and you're in Cleveland, Ohio, and they start thinking to themselves, why am I still sending you money? I know as much as you do, and you don't know as much about my town. Why am I still sending you fees? And a lot of franchisors don't get to that level of having a great answer to that. And that is the great race in franchising, to get to the point that you're providing value beyond your fees, so you never have to have those critical conversations.
Absolutely. So providing value beyond your fees, beyond your costs, is the real, really the ultimate goal. Once you're there and you're consistently there, right? You've got amazing business that people love to do business with, whether it's your franchisees, their customers, their teammates, their employees, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I love it. So when you think about this, I like what you said. You went from being a printing promotion business to the dream building business. That's such a great point. I mean, as we grow across the country ourselves, the most important thing we can do is really take the time so that our leaders, market by market, understand our dream and then understand their dream, understand our vision, and then understand their dream. And can we fulfill their vision, right? With their dream along with ours, right? Can we align, and will it you know, be a win-win? Because if you can do that, then you got something, right? But I can't imagine how you do that with 600 and how many franchises do you got out there?
650 approximately.
Mm-hmm. So they're about $1 million of business, basically?
Correct, on average. But that means probably 150 of those 650 are legacy. They're people that joined us back in the 80s and maybe the early 90s. And, you know, they're kind of still hanging on and milking the cow till it dies. Our business is very different. You know, we're not retail. We're not food. They all don't need to look alike or act alike. No two of our franchise offices look the same. And so people in this business, you know, they could do $200,000 or $300,000 and make $50,000 to $100,000 a year. So we've got some lower performers from those earlier years that never should have joined GoPharma. They just didn't know it, right? And so they believed in us when we really didn't have enough reasons for them to believe in us. And they can stay with us for as long as they like. But then we have another 400 owners that are really getting after it. And their sales, they range from $1 million, multi-million, $5 million. We have a bunch that are $10 million, a couple, three, I think, that are $25 million, and one person that's this close to $50 million.
Wow. That's amazing. And tell us about the products and services that they provide their your customers and what that looks like. You know, how big the market, I'm sure the markets vary from a mid-sized market to very big markets. Tell us what the products and services look like.
And so the products and services are commercial printing. So we mostly call on the marketing department, the human resources department, the meeting and events department, and sometimes operations. So the products are everything printed, brochures or direct mail or folders or stationery or tags or labels, which is probably the most fast-growing part of our business, because you got to put labels on lawnmowers today saying, please don't put your arm in the hole here. You know what I mean? So, yeah. And I'm not trying to be silly, but it's very true. So that business, and then the promotional product segment, the branded items that companies give away to promote their brand, to promote events, et cetera, it's approximately a $300 billion industry. And I know we hear a lot of numbers, you know, with the government and the debt and all that. So numbers, but that number is as much as 300 billion is as much as all people in North America spend on all fast food. Chicken, pizza, submarine sandwiches, tacos, yeah, et cetera. It is a humongous industry. In fact, businesses spend about $1,000 per employee on the products that we sell.
Wow. Okay, so tell me this. In your opinion, you know, let's say it's 300, well, it's 300 billion. What are the barriers for you to get to 1% of that industry, to be that 1%? You know, $3 billion a year organization. And is it practical to get there? Is it practical, or are you then?
Yeah, sure.
Are you like, you know, stunting your own opportunities if you get that big?
No. Ours is a highly fragmented mom and pop industry because the barriers to entry are the ability to print a business card. However, the users today are becoming far more sophisticated in that they want better technology solutions, like built around a company store where organizations can communicate to all of their employees or maybe all of their distributed sales forces, sometimes to their customers or clients. What are all the products they can buy, and to be able to go online, having different levels of spending authority, et cetera. So to help our owners grow, we've invested over $20 million in the last 4 years, 5 years on our technology platform, on our company stores platforms, to help our folks grow in the marketplace and to differentiate themselves from the mom and pops that just don't have the level of technology and expanded services that we're able to offer.
So I can, you know, in our business is the Ray-Ban Group of companies. We have 14 companies now.
Okay.
And we pay parking lots across the country with five of those companies. We do, you know, doors and docks for big buildings and roofing maintenance and consulting and a lot of different things. We have two technology companies too that are in our industry that do really cool stuff. But overall, I can go to one of your franchisees in the Chicago market, let's say Schaumburg, Illinois, or wherever it be near there. And I could say, I want a company store for my customers that they can buy, you know, Ray-Ban stuff at a big discount, even if we, you know, pass on, you know, we did it at our cost or less to get in front of them. And then we could have a company store basically for our employees to buy whatever they want, Ray-Ban gear or Ray-Ban whatever. We give away a lot of stuff, but they oftentimes want to buy sweatshirts and hats and whatever, right? So that, so you could basically build that, and any of your franchisees can build that store for a company like ours.
Correct. And that's what really helps differentiate us from the competition. That's, they don't want to get on the phone anymore. They don't want to have to talk things through. You know, the younger folks, they just want to be able to make decisions online, on their phone, on their computer. And we deliver the technology so our franchise office owners can do that in the marketplace.
And you guys have great resource when it comes to shirts and hats and jackets and all the things that you would want in promotional items. I mean, basically anything you could ask for, right?
Well, and we even have more because of our size. We have access to suppliers offshore that have branded names. You know, in today's world, a lot more people want some of the sexy brands that are out there.
Sure.
And so we have access to some brands that other people just can't deliver on, like in the uniform space and or in the, you know, in today's office environment, you know, just a nice polo shirt with a logo on it is nice, but people want to, because people are concerned about recruitment and retention of employees, they want to really offer higher end stuff there. So we can offer some really branded products that say value to the employees and the team.
Cool. I love it. How about you guys do golf courses and stuff too?
Well, we do.
What? Like, products for golf courses. Like if somebody's got, owns a golf course, branded items for them as well.
Yeah, we do golf outings. So a company will do an outing and we'll help with their golf outings. But what's getting sold in the golf pro shop, we typically don't get involved there because that's a different business. And typically some of our suppliers are actually selling direct into those pro shops.
Sure. Okay, cool. All right, so when you look at, I mean, differentiation, I can think about a bunch of different ways you guys differentiate already, especially size-wise, you're able to do some really cool things, it sounds like.
Right,
what do you
right.
feel your biggest, the biggest lines of differentiation are for your franchisees competing against any one of their mom and pops or even the bigger competitors in the marketplace?
Yeah. So COVID brought us the best opportunity to differentiate our owners, and we had our best year up until that point in 2000 with COVID, because a lot of our suppliers that are doing wearables are in China or offshore, and they quickly converted to PPE, right? Masks and gloves and gowns, etc. And because of our relationships, we were able to secure the best of those suppliers that had accredited certified items that we could get out of China. There were a lot of fakes. I don't know if you remember reading that stuff in the news, a lot of things that didn't pass the test, but we were chartering jets, big jets, including the Antonov jet, if you've heard of the Antonov Russian jet, and we were filling them up in China. There was only room for two pilots and they were filled up with boxes of PPE. Oh. That year, instead of our sales going down, and we took massive risks because, for example, you probably chartering the jet was a $2 or $3 million investment. And if you're, it's not like flying private. You know, when you got a jet in China and you have a 10-minute window or whatever it is, that jet's taking off whether or not the product's on it or not. And so China was starting to get pretty fussy about what they let leave the country. And there were sometimes we were chewing our fingernails because if that jet took off empty, that was going to cost us $3 million no matter what. But we made the investment in our owners to help them go and grow through COVID. We helped them sell about $250 million worth of PPE. We made some of our people millionaires and multimillionaires. We never let them price gouge. I mean, we insisted on charging a fair price, even though they had probably the ability to charge a lot more because of the certified nature of everything that we were able to sell. Well, here's what happened. So because of that massive investment, and I think a lot of risk that probably most of our franchise owners don't appreciate, but nonetheless, our sales went up and their sales went up as a result. Well, what happened was a lot of their customers said, wow, I didn't know you did that, because a lot of our customers tend to peg our people as the brochure people or the hat people or the uniform people. They don't know the breadth and depth of everything we sell. Well, our ability to do PPE during COVID, when COVID was over, 2021 was an even better year, even though we had $250 million in PPE to make up for it. But our customers learned we were so much more than whatever they thought that we were. And we were also offering free stores, free what we call pop-up stores or basic stores at the time. So our sales even went up more massively because we differentiated ourselves to our customers. And that really helped them expand the knowledge of what the products and services were we offered, the company stores that we offered, and it really has helped set them up for massive success. And we continue to really grow well ahead of most of, if not all of, our competition.
Awesome. That's cool. Okay, so when you look at this, when you think about where are your products come from? Do some of your customers want American-made products? And if so, let's say a customer wanted their store to be filled with American-made only products. Are you guys able to find them now in every aspect of clothing and all the other things?
100%. We serve some unions, as an example, that only want American-made products in their stores. We serve some political campaigns that only want American-made products in their stores. We serve some restaurants and some other organizations that are very concerned about sustainability. We can fill a store with completely 100% certified sustainable products. And so we have the ability to meet the unique needs of the end user customer, whether it's made in America or certified sustainable or more.
Okay, so when you think about all these developments, right, all the different things in the country, when businesses look at long-term, right? Most good businesses, they want to invest in the community. Most good businesses, want to serve their customers with the products that the customer wants the most, right? So, I mean, I got to believe you're challenged on a constant basis, but it sounds like as you're being challenged, you guys found another opportunity. As you're being challenged with customers' problems or issues, right? Like COVID, like with sustainable items, whatever, it provides another opportunity for you guys to differentiate and grow that much more.
100%.
You're finding that, right? I mean, I sincerely believe if you're servant-minded, as you keep mentioning in this whole conversation, serving, you're servant-minded, if you're competitive, you love serving well and at a world-class level, boy, we find so many opportunities to grow as we constantly focus on seeking to serve our customers better than our competition,
right? And I think the key for our folks is not to just be product peddlers. Oh, we have pens or we have mugs or we have brochures. It's really trying to understand what is our end user customer trying to communicate to their employees or their recruit employees or their end user customers or more. And I mean, we just have some crazy customers. We have one of our customers is the most famous, I can't say her name, but the most famous pop singer that's wrapping up her tour right now. And we do all of her merch, her merch at the stadiums, her merch online, because we solve problems. In this particular case, we even created the custom jewelry she wanted to help promote her unique brand. So there's really, if you ask good questions, you find out really what people want. The world is yours. Yeah, the opportunities are in asking good questions.
Okay, so when you look at core values, core values and kind of your mission statements, all that, do you guys basically transfer that to every franchisee? Is the franchisor have their core values that they believe in, and is the franchise, are the franchisees different, or is it the same? Do you guys pretty much build, you know, live on the same values, core value system within your franchisor as the franchisees, or is that varied?
Our owners know our tagline for them is, we empower owner success. That's it. We empower their dreams. Sometimes we strayed away from that word because not everybody liked it. We empower their success. And the key for us is to know what does success look like. And for no two people does success look the same. And I'm so happy that our system doesn't require everybody to look the same, act the same, because like I said already, we're not food, we're not retail. And so we have people that do $300,000 a year and they're happy making $100,000. God bless them and working a couple of days a week. We have people that do $10 million, $25 million and more that are very, very wealthy people. And so we understand the sizes of their dreams, and we have great strategies and the team to deliver on those strategies to help them grow dynamically.
That's amazing. Yeah. And so like you're saying, they could, Is the Performa name on every company, or is they have their own brand?
No, they can white label, so they can use the name Performa, or they can use their own name, or they can use their name plus, like, you know, whatever, San Francisco Printing and Promotions powered by Performa. Just in the last week, Inc. magazine published its list of 5,000 fastest growing companies. 32 of our franchise owners made that list. 32 of our franchise owners. There's no other organization in the world that has more than a few franchise owners or distributors on that list. It's a record every year.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, there's not many, in my opinion, franchisees that have the ability to grow as big as yours do either, right? Your sky is kind of the limit. If you're in a big marketplace,
wow, you
can grow something special.
It's hard to know about ability. You know, if somebody buys the wrong franchise, they're like, it depends, because maybe that franchise limits their ability to grow. Like if you put your foot into the wrong size shoe, that shoe could limit your ability, your foot to grow. Our model has no limits. And so people can grow to as wild and aggressive as they want to dream and achieve. So I think our model also helps people. Whereas a lot of other franchise models could be very limiting, like you need a store and you can't, you know, those kind of things that, you know, they're more retail, and that's really hard to grow a retail business, especially in today's environment. Whereas we're more B2B. Most of our people don't have a retail location at all. And so they're out in the field, securing appointments and calling on businesses in a more B2B way. And so they can just grow far more massively and more quickly.
And does your franchisees only use your brands and your system, or do some of them have yours and another type of product or service they can deliver besides Performa?
No. They're free to use whatever supplier they would like. There's probably thousands of suppliers. But all of their business is a part of our system.
When you think about, you know, where you want to go, where you want to take this business, you know, where's your vision take this business in the next 10 years?
Yeah. So where does the business take me? This is the question for all business owners. Where do you want your business to take you? And this is something we work on with our owners and, in fact, with people in the industry. Most business owners think they either need to continue to work like a rented mule or sell their business. They don't really understand there's something in between called a lifestyle business. You know, like you read about Jeff Bezos. Well, Jeff Bezos isn't working at Amazon anymore. He's over on some big old yacht with some pretty old lady, right? So I don't think he's going to very many meetings. Not that we're Jeff Bezos, but we can live the same lifestyle if we structure our businesses the right way. If we structure our businesses the right way, where the right management is in place, Performa especially, because a lot of the back office services we provide for them, the accounting department, the accounts receivable department, the accounts payable department, the cash flow, and a whole lot more, they're able to delegate. The key to building a lifestyle business, to be able to live your life wherever you want, turn on your computer if you want and check in, or turn it off for 3 months. We call that the ability to go wherever you want in the world and tell us where to send your check. That's a lifestyle business. And so I similarly want to have a lifestyle business. I didn't start this business to work in this business till I died. I started this business to live the life of my dreams. And so my wife and I are now embarking on that. We just dropped our youngest daughter off at University of Florida last week. And so we're empty nesters for the first time. And so I want to go see the world and enjoy the world. We have 10 children, his, hers, and ours. 5 of our children are in the business. 3 of our spouses are in the business. And we have more hired guns that are managers in the business than that. And we would always want to have more hired guns. But we're training the next generation to run the business so we can go live our lives. And we're teaching our franchise owners and trying to help our franchise owners to do the same thing, to realize how they can live the life of their dreams by delegating more and going living their life more.
I love it. I love it. And tell me about all the back office stuff that you do to make their lives easier as that franchisor, right? Your job is to make their lives easy, as you do. Tell me all the back office stuff that you guys do from the start to finish.
So we're their marketing department, providing the marketing tools and resources and programs, digital and print and otherwise, for them to go sell customers. We're the technology department, providing them with the business operating, business management, and company source technology. They don't have to worry about that. We're their coaching department. We coach them and their people in how to go grow their sales. We're their vendor department, negotiating great deals with all the suppliers that they're reselling their products and services. But most importantly, and Gary, you'll appreciate this, I know, as an entrepreneur, you cannot delegate. You cannot delegate that checkbook to another employee inside of your business, because you probably don't have the internal controls that are necessary to make sure fraud doesn't happen. So, right? I mean, we all have heard stories of businesses that lost, by the time they figured out what happened, they lost so much money, they were out of business, even family ripped them off. And so we're their back office. We're their accounting department, their accounts payable department, their accounts receivable department. So their customers pay to them into a lockbox, a PO address. So their customers are paying them in their business name, but we're taking that money. We pay their suppliers usually a couple weeks faster on average than their customers pay them. So we're their cash flow, but we're writing those checks, because if the average invoice in our industry is $1,000, you can do the math on how many invoices does it take every month to do, $1 million a year or $5 million a year. And who wants to be writing all of those checks, thousands of checks? And so that could be the handcuff that ties people to their business, making sure those checks are going out to their suppliers. Our owners don't have to worry about that. We're writing the checks. So we're bringing in the cash from their customers. We're paying their suppliers, and we're sending them their net proceeds, right? Their profits, if you will, on their sales. So they can also delegate the accounts payable and accounts receivable cycle, which give people the peace of mind in knowing their cash is secure.
Yeah. Now, were you able to do this initially, or have you added all these services since you've grown to be able to stomach it financially as you grow larger? You've been able to sell that, or were you doing all this stuff from the start and providing all these things for them? And that didn't be kind of painful when you were very small, I'm guessing.
Well, from the very beginning, we did the cash, the accounts receivable, accounts payable, and the cash flow support. Over time, of course, we grew the technology. I didn't have $20 million to invest in technology back then. And so we added really great technology over the years. We added really great coaching over the years. Now, with our size, we have suppliers that'll bend over backwards to do business with us and give us the great, if not the greatest, pricing and service in the industry. So, yeah, clearly, Gary, as we continue to grow, we are able to grow the value that we deliver to our owners every day.
That's really cool. I love it. And I can't imagine what I mean, I'm not sure if you want to share what percentage you get from your franchisees, but whatever it is, I mean, I know there's all different numbers out that I see in franchisees, whether it's 5% or 8% or whatever the number is, but it's a challenge, as you said, to make sure that you're giving more value than that. But I can't imagine the difference in what your vendors will give you when you're spending whatever $400 or $500 billion a year on products, right? Compared
to mom and
pop that's buying $10,000 a year, right?
Yeah. Our owners could never do for themselves what we do for them for the fees that they pay.
Yeah. And that's what you have to continually be conscious of and continually build your business on, right? So that's amazing. That's awesome. That's awesome. And when you think about, giving back, what are some causes you guys believe in that your organization perform on? You guys have a foundation, or you guys just as an organization give back, or your franchisees kind of have their own things going on, or how do you guys look at that?
Yeah, our franchise owners are doing their own things out in the marketplace, and we help support that with them. Of course, giving back first starts with just helping our owners have their dreams come true. That's critical for us because probably the most important dream, one of the top two dreams in North America, is owning one's own successful business. You know, people probably want to have a great family, and then after that, they probably want to have a successful business, those people that are entrepreneurial minded. So we invest a lot in making sure we're delivering on their ability to live the life of their dreams. But yeah, we do have charitable organizations here in Tampa and elsewhere, that we enjoy working with. And, you know, around the holidays, we get our employees involved with one of the homes here that we do work with, and we have a holiday party and get gifts for the kids and send it over to that house. So we also give our owners and our employees and support team members an opportunity to get involved. Not that they need to give the kind of money we give, but just to have an opportunity to just maybe buy a bathrobe or a Nerf football for a kid and feel a part of making a difference in a charity locally. And then typically when we go to towns and have our Million Dollar Club or annual convention, we'll partner with a charity there. So we're always trying to bring some value to whatever town we go visit with our meetings.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, building business and you know, the American dream for so many is an amazing blessing for you to be leading that. How do you beat that?
Yeah, we just had our annual convention down here in Florida. So I know we partnered. I forget what the organization was, but we partnered with our suppliers and we partnered with that organization to provide backpacks that were filled with pens and pencils and notebooks and calendars and all of the things that they needed from the backpack stuffed with everything they needed to go back to school. And that's just really cool for those kids to get that kind of stuff that they otherwise wouldn't have. And then we involve our owners. So it was at the women's event this year that the suppliers were there. And at the end of that event, our people got involved in taking the items, putting them into the backpack, stuffing the backpacks, and then seeing all of those hundreds or how many backpacks there were, seeing them get delivered to that cause so that those kids had a backpack. Those are feel good moments.
There's no doubt about it. When we as businesses can give back and then we can actually engage our teammates, our leaders, and any teammates who want to be part of that.
Right.
It's really cool. When you see your leader, your teammates and your leaders in your business, like jumping in and you see how much they love giving, they're the same exact teammates usually that love raising their hand to help that person next to them when they need a hand late at night before they leave the office, right?
We also help different schools with their entrepreneurship programs. University of Florida down here, University of Tampa down here, Notre Dame University, where my wife went, Case Western Reserve up in Cleveland, and others, where we get involved in helping judge the competition, the business plan competition. We've donated to the University of Florida entrepreneurship program we didn't do it last year, but the year before we were the sponsor of the $50,000 Big Gator Competition Award for the winner of the overall business plan competition. I love that. I love helping those youngsters just hear what does it take to start and grow a business and listen to their ideas and watch them grow.
Absolutely, it's a blast. I've done a lot of that in yeah. Chicago and in schools, and I'll continue to do that wherever I'm at. It's a lot of fun when your story can inspire others. When you know you can share your experiences, good, right. bad, and ugly, right? As an entrepreneur, and you know that people listening that care, that pay attention, are going to get something out of it. That's hopefully spark their own entrepreneurial dream, right? So that's exactly. really cool. Well, what you're doing is amazing, I really appreciate you being. I think about all the lives you're affecting positively in this country. You're a blessing to so many. All 650 of those franchisees and those suppliers and everybody that's making a living from your vision. So it's really pretty cool. Yeah.
So same to you, Gary. I know you're doing great things too, and I think people who are the most successful. Maybe they don't have the most money in the bank, but I think that they probably have the most joy in their soul, just knowing that they're helping others. Yeah, clearly, Gary, we're in this to help ourselves. I tell people I'm not the Red Cross, nothing wrong with you, but we're a for-profit company. You're a for-profit yep. company, but somewhere along the way, we need to profit others.
Yeah, 100%. I think when we serve others well, our teammates, our employees, yeah. our teammates, our leaders, by creating better leaders. And then, of course, our customers, right? If we can deliver differentiation and better value to our customers, it's an amazing relationship where we profit, of course, and we continue to grow these services to be better and better for our
exactly.
customers.
Exactly.
Good stuff. But Chris is going to jump in now. Chris, jump in and tell us a few things you got out of Greg, this all-star that we have as a franchisor. And Greg, by the way, I want to come up and see you sometime up in Tampa. Maybe I can buy you lunch or something, right?
Come on up. Let's go.
I'm looking to buy a paving company up there in the next 6-7 months, just so you know. So we'll be up
there. Let me know. Right. You're more than welcome.
Awesome. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to share your wonderful experiences with us. I too started my entrepreneurial journey after being an accountant, and I think day one I was like, yeah, this ain't gonna work out. And I very much identify with feeling quite unemployable, which I think is a benefit. I wanted to ask you a question or two before I jump into my takeaways. I noticed a lot of our guests lately have found tremendous success from the franchising route. Can you tell us about your experience kind of growing a business and why you chose franchising and how franchising has kind of evolved over the last decades?
Yeah, I think a lot of people get into franchising for the wrong reason. And they get into it because they think that they're going to use other people's money as venture capital because they don't have a proven successful business model. And so anybody that thinks they want a franchise should join the International Franchise Association, listen to what they have to say, and start to understand what does it mean and what are the requirements to franchise. We got, I'm a big believer in the law of attraction. I'm sure Gary is, and you are too. At the end of the day, I think franchising found us. We didn't necessarily find franchising. In fact, this whole business found me. I didn't even find this whole business. So, we were actually going to try to grow through the traditional hire a sales manager in the next town over kind of a thing. And franchising found us.
That's great. Has it evolved at all over the years, like the services you offer, how you interact with them? I mean, obviously you guys started before the internet was even a thing. So I must have massively.
Yeah. The products that we offer have expanded over time. The services that we offer have become technologically far more sophisticated. The way we deliver the value to our franchise owners has certainly evolved over time. And the franchising world itself continues to evolve because it is a regulated industry, regulated by the FTC. Similar to the way publicly held companies, not the same, but similar to the way publicly held companies are regulated by the SEC. So there are regulations involved, and those regulations vary over time, and they seem to be especially with this current administration. That's not a political comment. It just is what it is. The FTC seems to be changing some rules pretty quickly.
Got it. Awesome. And my final question, which I also very much identified with, you mentioned a big key to your success was having balls the size of this room. I think you look at every successful entrepreneur, business owner, you're like, yeah, that person has, you know, male, female, everything in between. They have balls the size of this room. Is that something you're born with, or is that something you can develop? Some combination of the two?
It's a combination of the two. I believe that I think everybody can grow kahunas to get it done, because when your why is big enough, so will your kahunas be. And sometimes it's out of need. You need to get going and growing because the job market just didn't fulfill the needs that you had. And sometimes it's because your dream. So some of us are pulled into creating a business and having to have big kahunas. Some people are pushed into it unwittingly, maybe, and shouting and screaming. But yeah, I think circumstances can give anybody the kahunas they need to achieve whatever they want. The most number one thing is a positive attitude and positively sure you can do it.
Amen. Awesome. Thank you, Greg. All right, now I'll share my favorite takeaways. You said this before we even started. It takes a big group to make a big change. Be unemployable. Have balls the size of insurance, as we just discussed. Marry someone to turn your critical mess into a critical mass. That's amazing. Have a lot of fun with a lot of people, and success is sure to follow. Get to the point where you're providing value beyond your costs to franchisees. The servant mindset will find the most opportunities for growth, and then help others, and you know, all that help will come back to you. Great. Where can our audience find out more about you?
So they can learn more about Proforma at Proforma.com, proformafranchise.com. And if anybody just wants to ask me a few questions, so many people, and I know, Gary, you know this too, so many people were foundational and instrumental in giving me advice. Email me, Greg, G-R-E-G, at proforma, proforma.com. It would be my honor to answer people's questions and help them achieve their next level of success, just like so many wonderful people have helped me.
That's awesome, Greg. I appreciate that. Lastly, my question, do you feel like there's many industries that aren't really built for franchising? I mean, I gotta tell you, my industry, we've considered a few times the paving industry to franchise. And, there are seal coating companies that have franchised for the small maintenance work, residential or commercial. But in our industry, we've got some systems, and we've got some technology like nobody in the world. We've often thought about it in the paving business, right? But we do, parking lots across America, and when you look at that, could we be serving our customers better if we had 100 franchisees under our brand? There's no doubt we could, right? But is that an industry?
The two keys are: after you teach somebody that's hungry, they pay you some money, they want to be taught the industry. After you teach them to be successful, why are they still sending you fees after they know the business about as well as you do, they think, and they're in a town that you don't understand? If you can answer that question, number one, and number two, if the margins are high enough, are the margins high enough for there to be a fee structure in it that's worthwhile for you, the business owner? I think some businesses may have such a low margin opportunity that there's maybe not room for royalties, or we call them service fees.
Yeah, great questions. I like it. And I think the answer there is yes and yes to that. But Yeah, we just have to figure out for us if it's the right fit as we either acquire businesses across the country to grow it out, because we've done everything organically thus far. And we believe that we can get to a $1 billion brand in a short period of time, whether it's partnering with a PE firm, you know, just partnering with our bank, or potentially franchising, right? So we gotta look at it. So really appreciate that. I tell you, Greg, you're a wealth of information and just a great soul and a great entrepreneur. We're blessed to have you today. Really appreciate it. And I hope you'll take my call when I call you to come up and when I'm in Tampa looking at businesses. I can stop by and buy a breakfast, lunch, or whatever you want.
Let me know. You're always welcome. And as long as I'm in town, it'd be great to get together and hang out. And congratulations to you on your success and everything you're doing for the people in your world, your business, and your universe.
Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate being on today. And until next time, thanks for listening today. Ditch Digger CEO. Thanks to our guest, Greg Mazzillo. See ya.
If you enjoy this show, please share with anyone else you think will find value here. And please go to our website, ditchdiggerceo.com, for show notes, links, video clips, and more nuggets of entrepreneurial wisdom. Don't forget to follow me on social media at ditchdiggerceo.
Cans, paper routes, mowing lawns, careless hands. Daddy had 6 kids to raise. Not the words you said. Watched his every move and followed his footsteps.
From
pick and shovel in these two hands.
To the
suit wearing CEO, I'll stand. Already had nothing at all. Fearless of losing it all. Ditch Digger CEO. Watch them as they left to you.